Welcome back, everyone. It's gonna be a big one. It's Wednesday on the Damage Report, and thus, J.R. Jackson, how's it going?
Yo-ho! What's going on, Sharon?
Legendary producer of The Young Turks joining me today for a big show. We're gonna be talking about climate change. Uh-huh. We've got Bernie's new housing plan, which just came out. We've got Ilhan Omar attacking Donald Trump, who then attacks her back and in a completely deranged way. We're gonna have that. We've got Chuck Nice joining us to talk about his climate event, which is coming up soon. And Zeke Stokes from GLAAD is gonna be talking about the upcoming GLAAD Presidential Forum, which is happening this Friday in Iowa. Gonna be joining us in about 10 minutes or so to talk about that.
It's time for Hot Take Wednesday. Mm-hmm. I was getting ready this morning. I said, let me go ahead and throw all this extra stuff on, tie, shirt, and everything. You know what I realized? Mm-hmm. Ties and shirts and all that stuff are supposed to be a responsible thing. In reality, I don't trust people that wear suits, shirts, and ties every day.
I understand that.
Bankers.
Yeah.
Politicians.
Car salesmen. Yeah, it is kind of like the people
it's like
you least trust.
The people that are trying to make you think they're responsible when they're really just trying to take something from you.
Yeah, I like that shirt. I don't know if you can really tell, but it has a very subtle pattern. I like it.
Thank you.
I want it.
I have a brand new Mazda. Slightly used, but new at the same time that I can sell you.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, and by the way, I was planning on wearing a t-shirt on the show, but when he came in here with his tie, I was like, well, gotta put on a shirt, I guess.
Fun fact, I used to sell Fords.
You did?
For like
did
a month or two.
Oh, really? Yeah. And I used to work at a Ford dealership.
It sucked.
Yeah. So really fast, before we jump into the biggest topic perhaps of the day, I just wanna let you know that as of like late last night, Ed Buck, who we've talked about on the show actually very recently, who had this wealthy, well-connected Democratic donor guy or whatever, he's had two people in the past over to his house, generally young gay black men, who he allegedly pumps full of his own drugs and they've died. Two people have died. One incident like this, an overdose would be a tragedy, a death would be an even bigger one. Two can't even comprehend, but then on top of it, for there to be no consequences, that's even worse. Well, as of apparently like sometime this week, the details are just starting to come out, there was a third overdose. So thankfully this time did not result in death, but he has actually been arrested thanks to the hard fighting over a long period of time of a number of different people. Now this is not a guarantee of any sort of consequences, but there was at least something. And we're gonna have more details hopefully for tomorrow. We have a guest who has some insider knowledge from being involved with the families of those who have died along the way, who's gonna be joining us tomorrow.
It's another illustration of the way our judicial system works. And we don't see these stories a lot because the idea here was to cover this one up too. Mm-hmm. This type of thing happens, maybe not all the time, but enough of the time with no consequences that there's people who realize that about our system and they use it.
Yeah. If you have a certain amount of resources, if you have certain connections, you're free from consequences. And then, I don't know all the details of the most recent thing, but think about what it says that this person, let's say, in some crazy world that doesn't actually exist, there had never been any ill will. Two terrible tragedies, two terrible accidents. Then you invite more people over.
Exactly.
That's sick. That's sick. The best case scenario is almost unimaginably sick. And that's not the true. That's not actually what's going
on. That's acknowledging that you didn't just mess up. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have anything to answer
for. Predatory.
Yeah, if something like that happened, you're responsible, you go, oh my God, I better make sure that I don't do this again.
Yeah. And I know some people might be uncomfortable about because he's tied to the Democratic Party talking about it or whatever, that's absolutely ridiculous. It should have absolutely nothing to do with the consequences that he should face and our coverage of it. So hopefully more tomorrow with a guest who has been working inside of the story. But with that, we're gonna jump to the first big story of the day having to do with climate change and the upcoming climate strikes over the next two Fridays. Greta Thunberg arrived at the US and hit DC like a wrecking ball, to use a very relevant musical reference. But no, really, like in the same way that she has just bulldozed BS excuses from politicians across Europe, she's now doing the same thing here. Let's go to a little bit of her congressional testimony.
My name is Greta Thunberg. I have not come to offer any prepared remarks at this hearing. I'm instead attaching my testimony. It is the IPCC Special Report on Global Warming of 1.5 degrees Celsius, the SR 1.5, which was released on October 8th, 2018. I am submitting this report as my testimony Because I don't want you to listen to me. I want you to listen to the scientists. And I want you to unite behind the science. And then I want you to take real action.
That's a strong move. Like, I mean, like I would be crippled with anxiety and fear if I were testifying before that. She comes in and she's like, no, I'm not. Yeah, it's a great opportunity. Thanks for bringing me here. I'm not giving you my testimony. I'm giving you this report. Finally, read it.
It's,
I like that.
Again, we were just discussing, I believe she's 16 years old. You were telling me now. I thought she was 14, 15. Either way it goes, she's in that age range. And I want you to put yourself in the position of being a 16-year-old at best, at the oldest, and testifying before Congress after touring the world and continuing to try to convince the most powerful people in the world about what's blatantly in front of everyone's face and what we can do about it. And presenting it without going, hey, I'm just this kid, you should listen to me because I'm cute, which is a lot of times people will use children to try and push together some kind of agenda. She's coming to you with facts. She goes, stop looking at me, stop talking about me. Let's talk about the scientists and the science that's behind it.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, we got 25-year-olds that don't understand how to approach these types of things or how to even speak on it. It's impressive. And
more 65-year-old politicians
true,
who don't know how.
True. And it's impressive. And I hope that there's a different voice that allow people to actually look at the real thing behind it.
Yeah. And so look, the climate strikes are coming up this Friday, next Friday. I'm going to be downtown L.A. For this Friday, Emma Vigeland's going to be at the New York because these strikes are going on obviously all over the place. We'll give you information then. But to give you an idea about some of the psychology behind some of the leaders of the groups that are leading these strikes, take a look at how she received some of the attempts at like praise that, you know, like a young person goes to Washington, meets with politicians, the normal sorts of things politicians will say to them. Look at her response. So Senator Ed Markey, who's actually one of the better Democrats on climate change, co-sponsor of the Green New Deal, he says to Greta, we need your leadership. Young people are the army. You put a spotlight on this issue in a way that there has never been before. And she responded, please save your praise, we don't want it. Don't invite us here to tell us how inspiring we are without doing anything about it. We don't want to be invited to these kinds of meetings because honestly, they don't lead to anything.
Straight up. And okay, and you know what? I'm okay if you want to start by assuming that she's a puppet and there's puppeteers and there's these people with this lib agenda that are using her for their own purposes. I don't think she was given that line.
No.
I don't think she was prepared to talk to Ed Markey, who was out to praise her. So were they prepared for all this? They feed her that line too?
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm okay if you want to criticize if someone's being used because I don't think children should be used when they're not really the person that's involved.
Yeah.
But in this case, I think it's pretty obvious it's coming from her.
Yeah. There's one other example of that, by the way. So at one point, Senator Tom Carper, another Democrat, told the assembled environmental activists they'd soon have the opportunity to seek office themselves, bringing more concrete change. And she responded, we don't want to become politicians. We don't want to run for office. We want you to unite behind the science. I'm sorry, I know you're probably trying very hard, and this is not personally to any one of you, but generally to everyone. I know you're trying, but just not hard enough. For a kid to say that to a politician, and a politician who considers himself, you know, obviously an ally on this issue. And look, it's not to say that there aren't reasons. He can put forward whatever bill he wants right now, and as of right now, barring something happening, the Senate's not going to do anything on it. But something could happen. I don't necessarily know what it is. I don't necessarily have like the magic button that changes things. But they are politicians and they have a lot of power. And there is a hypothetical world in which they have placed the sort of pressure on Mitch McConnell and other Republicans where something does actually get done. And that is what she wants. She's not interested in even my excuses like the Republicans can block any legislation. And that's good.
Yeah, it's working.
So this strike is going to happen. And just you know, as we gear up for this strike, couple little pieces of news just to bear in mind super fast. Today, Trump announced that California's right to set its own fuel emission standards, that's gone. He's axing that.
Yep.
So there's the federal CAF standards, so set up under Barack Obama. Obviously, he's getting rid of those, so higher fuel economy across the country. But even our state's rights choice to have higher emission standards for ourselves, considering smog and all of that, nope, they're not allowing it. So if you ever hear about states' rights, just remember this.
Yeah.
So more fuel efficient cars, he's not interested, he's breaking that. Let's see, AOC was recently commenting on a new report showing that extreme weather has already displaced 7 million people this year, saying, remember when we said climate change would cause mass migration and the right called us crazy? Well, it's happening, and walling ourselves off from the world isn't a plan for our future. It's time to recognize climate refugees in our immigration policies. That is not a report saying that by 2050 there will be 7 million climate refugees. That's right now, already in the first half of the year. It is only going to get worse from here on out, and especially worse if we don't do anything.
Every time, and as we continue, and whoever politicians from whatever place or leaders want to say, look at all these folks coming over here, they're invading us, bring this back up, because they're going to blame the people that are the victims of the problem.
Yeah.
As usual.
Yeah, they have their conspiracy theories about George Soros organizing caravans. You're causing it. Not directly, you don't want to, but you're causing climate migrants to have to flee the countries that they're from through your inability or unwillingness to do anything about climate change.
And if it was your father, your grandfather that started the whole thing, that's okay, they're gone now. Now it's your turn to do something different.
Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, lots more to get to.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Joining us once again on the program, Zeke Stokes, Chief Programs Officer for GLAAD. Zeke, welcome back to the Damage Report.
Thank you for having me, John. I really appreciate it.
Glad to have you here. So in just a couple of days, actually this Friday, GLAAD is sponsoring an LGBTQ presidential candidates forum in Iowa, and the co-sponsoring it. And so tell us a little bit about this event. What is it intended to shed light on in regard to these candidates?
Sure. Well, we've had five official Democratic debates already in this cycle. I'm sorry, three. Three official Democratic debates already in this cycle: Houston, Detroit, Miami. Five nights of debating, and yet only one LGBTQ specific question was asked, and it was asked of Tulsi Gabbard, and it wasn't about issues facing our community. It was actually about her own past record of anti-gay activism. So GLAAD, along with our partners at The Advocate magazine and One Iowa and The Gazette in Cedar Rapids, said that's not acceptable. And so we came together to host this two-hour opportunity for LGBTQ Iowans and LGBTQ people all across the country to hear specifically from these candidates on what they would do to turn around this Trump record on anti-LGBTQ equality and how they would stand up for all marginalized communities, including LGBTQ people, and put this country back on a road to 100% equality and acceptance.
Well, you know, that is actually, that's fascinating. One question across three debates, even though there are so many, like if you just want to create as a moderator some drama between the candidates and Donald Trump, he has given you so much ammunition in this area to bring up. And you shared with us an interesting study showing, let's bring up this chart. It's going to show people from July 2009 to now. This is across CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, the percentage of airtime mentioning the words gay or gays by month. And you can see that there are occasional spikes every once in a while. Again, this is over a decade, but for the most part, very little actual attention or interest on the part of the mainstream media. And so it's a very good idea to have a focused forum like this. So far, do you have any word on how many and which candidates are going to be taking part?
Absolutely. We'll have 10 of the top candidates, everyone from Joe Biden to Pete Buttigieg to Elizabeth Warren to Kamala Harris, and all the way all the way down the list. And we're really interested to hear from these candidates, you know, what they will do in their first 100 days of office to turn things around for LGBTQ people, and what is their vision for full equality and acceptance in this country. And as you said, that chart really speaks volumes, and it says a couple of things. One, that's what happens when we have a reality show president, a reality television president in the White House. The media is following the reality show, and they're not following so often what is really happening to our communities behind the scenes. They're not following the 125 attacks this administration has made against LGBTQ people, everything from removing us from the census to the trans military ban to siding with those who would discriminate against us in the workplace, at the Supreme Court, in a very, very important case that's going to be heard October 8th. So there's a lot going on behind the scenes, and we really need the media to turn its attention to the damage this administration is doing to LGBTQ people and to all Americans, and stop focusing on the reality show.
So you mentioned earlier that you'd like to hear from them, you know, what they actually plan to do. Give me an idea. Like, if you were advising these candidates, what could they say that would let you know that they take this issue seriously and that they will actually prioritize it were they to become president?
Sure. We need them to say that they will prioritize in the first 100 days getting the Equality Act through the House and the Senate and signing it. They need to say to us that they will prioritize ending so-called conversion therapy, which is really just child abuse by another name. We need to hear from them that they understand the epidemic of violence and hate that's on the rise against our communities, including and especially against transgender women of color. We have an epidemic of homicide in that community. And we need to hear from them how they're going to turn this cultural conversation around and end the politics of division and hate, and end the rhetoric of hate, and bring us all together again. Americans are on the side of LGBTQ equality. More than 80% of Americans say they support full equality for LGBTQ people. But this administration, despite the president wrapping himself in the pride flag on the campaign trail, is doing exactly the opposite. And we need the American people to understand that.
You know, I don't know for sure if you're as cynical politically as I am, but even if the Democrats do win in 2020, it is going to be difficult to get virtually anything done. And that's not to say that it won't get done, but that it will require a lot of effort, considering that the Republicans are likely to maintain control of the Senate. But in this particular area, many of the moves that you've talked about are executive orders that Donald Trump put into effect. Does it give you some confidence that we will see action, knowing that as long as there's pressure there, through executive orders, executive actions, one of these candidates could reverse a lot of the damage that's been done?
Sure, there's the executive order path, but I think there's also the reality that when you get outside of the DC Beltway and the politics of the two political parties, equality is really not a partisan issue. 80% of Americans support equality for LGBTQ people. And Mitch McConnell and Republicans in the Senate have been standing in the way of that, but they're really standing in the way of the will of the people from their own state. Even in Mitch McConnell's home state of Kentucky and my home state of South Carolina, the majority of voters support equal rights under the law for all people, including LGBTQ people. So this is a partisan game being played in DC, but out in the real world, people believe in equality. They believe that's what this country was built on, what it should be standing for, and what our elected officials should be standing for. So I'm hopeful, even if we don't win a pro-equality majority in the Senate, that we can impress upon the leaders there and fair-minded Republicans to come our way and support equality measures that move the ball forward and bring us together.
So if people want to follow the forum on Friday, how can they do that?
They can go to GLAAD, that's GLAAD with two A's, .org/forum. There you'll already find a link to the live stream, which will go live at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on Friday evening, and will be streamed worldwide on YouTube and on lots of channels. And then we'll be replaying it over and over again throughout GLAAD's channels and through our media partners' channels. So there could be a lot of opportunities for Americans to see this, a lot of opportunities for LGBTQ Iowans to hear from these candidates about how they would turn things around for Iowans and for the country. And this is an historic night for our community.
Zeke Stokes, thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much.
We're gonna take a short break. We come back. Bernie Sanders launched his housing plan earlier today. We're gonna talk about some of the highlights after this.
Morning.
morning, Senator Bernie Sanders released the detailed housing plan that he's been alluding to over recent weeks. It's an amazing plan. We're going to have details for you in just a little minute. But because the plan advocates for people who desperately need help, you can expect that he's going to be attacked. And one of the reasons I know that in the recent past is the way he was attacked for a relatively benign comment about helping out our vets in terms of their health care. So he tweeted this: if you can't afford to take care of your veterans, then don't go to war. Which seems like the most reasonable thing I've ever heard. But it did generate some unreasonable reaction, including from Republican Congressman Dan Crenshaw, a veteran, who said, "Watching Bernie pander to different groups to get their vote has always disgusted me, but now it's personal. I didn't go to war so that you would take care of me, Bernie. I went because I wanted to serve and our country needed it." What is going on? Well, no, obviously you didn't go to war so that Daddy Bernie would help you later. But they need help. 22 vets commit suicide every day, and many of those who don't have persistent health problems, problems with the VA, problems with their health care in general.
Eventually, you have to choose which argument you're going to go with, because the argument is always that the Democrats don't take care of the vets, when in reality, it's obviously been a lot of times lately, the conservatives that don't take care of vets. They just speak a good game, wrap themselves around the flag, say support the troops, send them off to die, because that's supporting the troops somehow. So, and then when you talk about pandering to certain people, so what is a politician supposed to do when he presents a plan that's supposed to help a certain group of people? Because when President Obama was in office, and he actually wasn't doing tons of things overwhelmingly for black folks, except giving some more of them a voice, and a person that can see where they're coming from, policy-wise, there wasn't tons of things. So now they're criticizing Obama for not doing so many things for black folks. But every time he mentioned black people, they said he was pandering.
Yeah, that's true.
And he was riling up racial tensions, all these things. So now when a politician puts together a plan that's supposed to help out a certain group of people that are being underserved in our country and forgotten by the people who said they love them so much, it's pandering. Do conservatives pander to Christians when they say, "Hey, yeah, I read the Bible too," like Trump keeps doing, when it's obvious that he doesn't know the first word in the Bible? Was he pandering when he went to New Mexico the other day and he said, "Hey, you Hispanics, you guys love drugs too, right?" And do you pander when you go and speak to the old elderly voters and you say, "Hey, you should bring it back to the old days of the 50s. Is that pandering?
Here's the Werther's original.
What's it going to be?
But they don't mind it then. Yeah, that's a great point. And look, I know some people are saying this is him using his military service as a shield. I think that that's to some extent true. I think they're also allowed to do that to some extent. But that's not the biggest issue I have with what he said. It's that they love to attack people like me and say, "You've got Trump derangement syndrome because you hate what Trump is doing and you attack him." I attack him because he represents the exact inverse of every political value that I hold. That's not deranged. That should be what you do. What he's doing is being moved by his hatred for Bernie Sanders into actually speaking out against the best interests of vets. He's being switched to a position where he's effectively saying vets should suffer and die to own the libs. That's what he's doing. That's derangement syndrome, when you actually act against your political values because of your partisan hatred. So
you'd have to start
that's
with,
just my,
you'd have to start with political values. So the last thing on the pandering: if you say how much you're going to do something and do nothing, that's pandering. If you approach a group and actually try and do something for them, that's legislating. That's representing the people. Yeah. But somehow it's completely flipped on its head. You're supposed to just speak a good game and then do nothing about
it. So look, you want details on the Sanders plan? We're going to give it to you before Dan Crenshaw attacks this plan too. By the way, go to BernieSanders.com and read the entire thing, because this is a very small portion of the entirety of the actual plan. But first of all, he starts off with an amazing intro to the plan, acknowledging the reality of housing in America, pointing out things like over 18 million families are paying more than 50% of their income on housing, which is, of course, not sustainable. And this is at the same time that Wall Street made $111 billion in profits. But you have to spend more than 50%. 7.7 million Americans and families are forced to pay more than half of their income on rent, even though they're eligible for Section 8 rental assistance, but don't get it because it's underfunded by people who don't care about those people. And so that's the intro. What is his plan? Well, a couple of the key points. He wants to provide $1.48 trillion over the next decade in the National Affordable Housing Trust Fund to build, rehabilitate, and preserve 7.4 million quality, affordable, and accessible housing units meant to eliminate the affordable housing gap. And so overall, increase the supply of affordable housing, not just luxury condominiums and things like that. He wants to invest an additional $400 billion to build 2 million mixed-income social housing units to be administered through the National Affordable Housing Trust Fund, which is going to help desegregate and integrate communities. This plan will guarantee equity in social housing units. There's some more as well, but just initial impressions.
Again, so when you put together a direct plan, now if you're going to have an opposition to it, answer those points. Mm-hmm. If you look at the first thing and say $1.48 trillion over the next 10 years, then you can, well, we know the normal approach is when it has anything to do with actual representative government is where are we going to get this money from? Mm-hmm. That's going to be the first question every time. So after that, then we can go with the normal general response, which no one will ever say. Where's the money coming from in the wars that we keep fighting? Where's the money coming from the corporate handouts we keep giving? We talk about money, so we can scratch that one. Secondly, if you want to talk about the making sure we desegregate and integrate communities, are you against that too? The reason he won't address the points is because you come out on the bad side of history when you actually address the points of the plan.
Yeah, exactly. And look, Donald Trump ran as a real estate populist who understands the pain of Americans who've been left behind. You know, a lot of those people who pay more than 50% of their income on housing, I bet a lot of them are Republicans, right? He could have done this. He could have put this into effect. He could have been the guy who fixes the housing problem. He's the builder, Don the Builder. He could have gone down in history, but of course he didn't because his populism is as big of a con as any other part of his entire history as an individual or as a public figure. And so it falls to people like Bernie Sanders who take this problem seriously. A couple more points. He wants to invest $70 billion to repair and modernize public housing, including making all public housing accessible and provide access to high-speed broadband for all public housing residents. Because as he points out, one of the reasons we're in the housing situation that we're in is because there's not enough federal funding for houses that are considered uninhabitable. They get demolished and they become empty lots as opposed to being renovated in a way that they could continue to be used, which is of course much more efficient in terms of cost rather than rebuilding new housing. He wants to fully fund tenant-based Section 8 rental assistance at $410 billion over the next decade and make it a mandatory funding program for all eligible housing, for households, I should say. So for all of the people who are on very low income, pay far too high of a percentage of their income on rent, and theoretically should be being assisted, but it just hasn't been there for them, this is going to fill that gap and make sure that you get what you are entitled to when it comes to that rental assistance.
When you have someone like Ben Carson running HUD, and you're supposed to be doing something for the community and also helping with the discrimination problems that happen, because people will do what they want to do, this is another thing that takes all this into account. There's plans that have to spread over all of this. So if you're to place a black man in charge of this, it's another setting to make everyone think, a veil to make sure everyone think that something is being done. Because the black guy's gonna do something for folks. How about he just do something for people? I don't care what color his skin is. How about he does something for people and the people who've paid into this? We're gonna go back to the money thing. People that are poor, lower to middle class people, pay a lot of money in taxes. Mm-hmm. They do, and they deserve to reap what they get as an American. We talk about how it's so lucky to be an American. You come in and people wanna come here and become Americans all the time. People that already are suffering and we're telling them they don't deserve it. I thought they were Americans. I thought they're the best humans on earth.
Yeah.
Why don't we respect them and provide them what they paid for?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And then think about the economic benefits that would come from this rather than people handing over 20, 30, 40% of their income needlessly just to landlords. They could instead be spending that, first of all, on things like food or healthcare, but also other things that actually could serve to stimulate the economy. This plan is expected to generate literally millions of jobs. At the same time, it's making the people who will fill those jobs able to get housing that doesn't financially cripple them. So if you want more details on this plan, there's a lot more where this came from at BernieSanders.com. You can go take a look at that. And by the way, one of the good things, whenever a plan like this is put out by Bernie Sanders, incredibly detailed, comprehensive plan, or Elizabeth Warren has been doing it for a long time too, it puts pressure on the other candidates to follow suit. And so hopefully you will see plans like this from other candidates. Not to say that nobody has a housing plan, but this sort of progressive housing plan is a great conversation starter, both for the movement, but also for all the other candidates.
The next time your preferred candidate says something about the homeless problem and how San Francisco is filthy and how lib states keep allowing people to live in tent cities and suddenly these homeless camps pop up, which I'm seeing a lot more of as well, driving around Los Angeles. When you see that and you complain about it, ask that same politician or even just your friend who's complaining, ask them what their position is on a housing plan to take care of it. Yeah. And if they have no thought about it or if they have no support or someone who or they support someone who doesn't care about it, they're part of the problem because they see it and they're not doing anything about it.
Exactly. We're gonna take a short break. Stick around. We are in the middle of an incredibly important two-week period when it comes to the fight against climate change, with big climate strikes happening both this Friday and next Friday, as well as a number of other events that you're going to want to pay attention to if you're interested in doing something about the climate crisis. And joining us now on the show is someone who is going to be doing one of those events. If you're on the East Coast, you might want to take a look at. This is Chuck Nice, comedian and climate activist. Chuck, welcome back to the show.
Hey, John, how are you, man? How you been?
I've been good. Climate hasn't, but I'm doing okay. How are you?
This is true. I'm in the exact same kind of position as you. Yeah. I think we all are, without whether we know it or not, we're all in the same position. Next week is NYC or Climate Week NYC, and I've been fortunate enough to work with the climate group, the people behind Climate Week NYC, and they are supporting us through. Giving us the opportunity to do a proof of concept show, which is a part of a campaign that I founded that I talked to you about a little while ago called Shh, It's Real. And the shush part is for those who are denying or obfuscating this issue, because we've gotten to a place now where we don't really have as many deniers as one might think. But what we do have are a lot of people who are negative about the issue, people who are kind of confusing the issue. And so we're telling them to shh. And for everybody else, it's real. And if you collapse it, you know, I can't curse because, you know, but if you collapse it, you understand what it is.
I get it, yeah. It took me a bit, but I do get it now.
Yeah, exactly. And so, when you talk about realness hitting the fan, that's kind of where we are. So what we're doing, the campaign itself, is an attempt to take entertainment and use it as the messaging tool for climate. Of course, I'm a stand-up comic, so I've been in entertainment now for 20 years. I also came to the climate issue through my 10 years of work with Star Talk Radio, which is the show I do with Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson. I'm actually in his I'm in his office right now.
You see it,
That's him. That's his bobble. But what happened was I was spending all this time with these scientists, and I was doing research for the shows we were putting on and finding out all of this incredible information. And I looked around and I was like, okay, why is no one actually saying this stuff? Why is the media saying this stuff? You, my friend, have been on this issue for quite some time and doing a great job of telling people about it and alerting people and sounding the alarm bells. But what I realized is that we need a point of connection. And entertainment is always a point of connection. I tell people that everything you learned as a child, you learned through song. There's a reason for that. Your brain is designed to receive information differently when you are entertained. It's part of the dopaminergic system, which just means that the drugs in your brain actually give you a little hit when you learn something and you're entertained at the same time. So that it becomes a pleasurable thing and you want to know more. Using that as a base, I was like, well, why are we not using entertainment to communicate climate? And that's what this whole campaign is about. So we use sketch comedy, stand-up comedy, short film, musical performances. We bring them all together. And all of the content is actually about climate. And then we give you interstitial messaging that is hopeful and positive about what you can do about this issue. Because one of the things that burns me up is when I hear people say, well, changing habits isn't going to be enough. I mean, you know, turning off lights and eating one less burger a week, that's not going to do it. And I tell those people, please, you know, shut up. Because just shut up. You're not helping things. Because the real deal is this. It does make a difference. If we all lower our carbon footprint individually, we all lower our carbon footprint as a country.
Yeah.
And that's all there is to that. I mean, it's the difference. It's like coral. You know, one little coral, this little like microscopic organism, you know, by itself, it's doing nothing. But when you put them all together, you get the Great Barrier Reef, which, by the way, is in danger because of climate crisis. Yeah. So, you know, this is what I'm trying to get to people to see, is that it's not about you just doing one thing. It's about being engaged. once you're engaged, you're more likely to do more than one thing. You're more likely to become passionate about this because it is your survival that we're talking about. And you're very likely to do to change the way you vote. You're very likely to, you know, start making mitigation efforts of your own, to start demanding things like, hey, don't send me plastic forks and knives unless I ask for it.
Yeah.
You know, like when there was a drought, I'll never forget. I forgot where I was, and they were like, oh, would you? We have to ask if you would like water. We used to just put it on the table. But as a conservation method, you know what I'm saying? They would say, would you like water? Well, that's just a tiny little change, but it makes a huge difference. We know these things work. If you look at day zero, okay, in Johannesburg, they were running out of water. And through public change of habits, they actually staved off a crisis. That's what we can do with respect to the globe. Don't let anybody take your individual power. You do have the ability to make a change, and that's what we're doing. So Wednesday, the 25th of September in New York City at New York Comedy Club, we'll be putting on a proof of concept show with stand-up comedy, sketch, short film, and musical performances to bring this issue to light in such a way where people understand that entertainment is a point of connection.
Chuck, it's JR. First of all, I love the approach with telling people that aren't really going to listen, you can already tell aren't going to be part of the solution. Just move on and move away from them. Shut up and move on. So what have you seen as far as the reception from people that have been listening? Do they like the concept? Has it been something that activates people that you've seen right in front of you?
Absolutely. And this is what I'm so encouraged about is that, number one, so, you know, we're at this point as an organization, we're just, you know, we're crawling. No one has ever tried this before to actually make the entire campaign about entertainment and education. So, you know, we're in a space that normally when you're the first person in a space, you don't succeed. but I'm willing to take that chance. But everyone that we've gone in front of has been like, brilliant idea. We love it. And everyone that we engage with, especially young people, our audience is 16 to 25, because primarily what we want to tell people is vote. Okay. 21% of young people between the ages of 18 and 30 used to vote. And now it's up to 31%. And I think we can get it to 50%. And if we get it to 50%, we rule the world. Okay. That's all there is to it. You want to talk about progressives? All the people in that age group, for the most part, are progressive, but they don't go to the polls. And that's because they're cynical as well. I hate to say that, but they are. And what I'm saying is we can drop cynicism. Cynicism is the tool of people who want to maintain the status quo.
Yep.
Don't ever think that cynicism is about people saying, it don't make a difference, nothing I do. Oh, man, come on. No. Cynicism is about people who say, I need this to stay exactly how it is. So, yeah, guess what? No, nothing makes a difference. Yeah. Nothing. Yeah, they're all crooks. Nothing matters. You know why? Because I get to keep polluting. I get to keep putting and dumping plastics into the ocean. I get to keep digging crap out of the ground and burning it. That's never going to change unless we exercise the political will to make it change. And we can't do that with doom and gloom. And that's why entertainment is the perfect touch point. And I use this, I know we're short on time, but I use this as an example for everybody to understand. This is how powerful entertainment is in terms of changing the way you think. Without entertainment, I am positive. Now, I can't say this empirically, because I don't have a time machine, but I am positive that we would never have had our first black president, Morgan Freeman. But on the real, what I'm saying is, if it weren't for Morgan Freeman saving the world, okay, if it weren't for Dennis Hastert, the guy who played in 24, the president, I think that softened the animus of the concept of a black president. And so it didn't become such a ridiculous premise because there was a black president in your home. You know what I mean? So that's what I'm saying about entertainment. That's the power that it has.
Yeah. Look, I love what you're doing. I hope the event is packed, you know, beyond the fire code. And I hope we keep talking. Chuck, obviously good luck. Let's talk soon and see how the trial run went.
Absolutely, man, and appreciate all that you do, and
same
appreciate
you.
Your support, man. Seriously, I'm so grateful to you. Seriously,
thank you, man. Chuck, have a good day.
Take care.
We're gonna take a short break. We come back just a little bit more to close out the show.
I think we need to make sure that the American people understand that this administration that lies about weather maps or crowd sizes cannot be trusted to give us the full information we need to be able to make a decision whether we should be going to war or not with Iran.
That's Representative Ilhan Omar very wisely pointing out that we should accept anything coming out of the administration that's being used as a pretext for a war with a big old pile of grains of salt. And also bear in mind that after that video was taken, Saudi Arabia has come out and said that they are 100% certain that it was Iran. Maybe it was Iran. To me, it's immaterial. We shouldn't go to war with Iran anyway. But I'm glad that she's speaking up, knowing that she is going to be attacked. And in fact, she was. Now, really fast, here's another thing that she said last night. Congress has the constitutional right to declare war. The president doesn't have it. The Secretary of State doesn't have it. And Saudi Arabia certainly doesn't have it. Because you know what she does? She criticizes other countries, including Saudi Arabia, even though she gets attacked for only criticizing Israel, not Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Sort of weird how they forget that. But she does. And you know what? She does get attacked. So let's run through the ridiculous thing that's happened. So a couple days ago, this is like a week ago, Adam Green, friend of the show, tweeted out a video. The tweet caption was, "Can someone name something better than Ilhan dancing to Lizzo? Because I can't think of anything." Here's a few seconds of the video. You see her there, she's dancing and having fun. How could she? But she's having fun. And you know how that video was used? So this morning, Donald Trump retweeted a tweet. He says, "Ilhan Omar, a member of AOC plus three, will win us the great state of Minnesota, the new face of the Democrat Party." The tweet he retweeted was this: "Get this woman out of office. Ilhan Omar partied on the anniversary of 9/11 because she believes some people just did something." That guy was knowingly lying about what she was partying for. It wasn't even on 9/11, but he used that. And the president doesn't care if anything he says is true, doesn't care if he inspires his followers to commit some act of violence against a politician, so he just retweets it. He cared so little about it that he didn't even check it. It ended up getting taken down from Twitter, by the way, because it was so obviously false, but not before the president launched this attack against Ilhan Omar.
It's the way it works. When you don't have an argument, you have to go for things that make no sense, that are absolutely disconnected from your argument, just to smear the person who's making the valid points. And again, one of those valid points being, which many people, politicians for some reason, haven't been able to make, but actually connects to real people. When she connected the real thing about the weather maps and his general ineptitude with anything he does in the world, and saying, if he can't do these simple things correctly, how do we expect to trust his judgment when it comes to things like going to war against countries that he just doesn't like because of who they are? There's a reason behind breaking down who he is as a person, his vision of the world, and what he'll do in response. And this, again, this president retweets this ridiculous tweet only because it supports him and his ego.
Yeah.
Not because there's any basis of reality, but because it supports him. If you say something that kisses his butt, then you're good to go.
Yeah.
And that's what he approaches international affairs to. Why would you trust that person?
Yeah. Yeah, why would you trust this person?
Would
he's
you go to
lie
war
to you?
Based off of what he's saying? Would
God
you
only
send
knows.
Yourself to war? No, you wouldn't.
We better hope that guy doesn't tweet at Trump like saying like, you know, like he shows some footage from Independence Day and says, Iran just attacked DC. Like, God knows, we might launch bombs. Mm-hmm. We don't know. I don't know if Trump also knew it was a lie, or if he's just so mentally incompetent that he doesn't actually check these sorts of things and just spreads it to literally tens and tens and tens of millions of his own followers. But it's awful. It's awful if you care about the truth, and it's awful, also awful if you care about the lives of politicians like Ilhan Omar, who have faced endless death threats and will likely get more in the wake of this latest attack. As always, JR, thank you so much for joining
me.
Thank you, everybody, for watching. Lots more to come in the last 2 days, including JR hosting on Friday. So look forward to that.
He's playing hooky.
Something like that.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.